Welcome to Tips from the Server Room. This podcast is designed for all you systems admins, network specialists, or the guys and gals out there in the office who handles it all. Sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy Tips from the Server Room. Hey, welcome back, my friends, once again to Tips from the Server Room. This is episode number 87 for April the 21st, 2015. I'm your host, Jack. I'm going to guide you through all this magic world of network connections, servers, switches, fiber optics, network cables, Cat 6, Cat 5, and all things that makes our job and our life so enjoyable. Friends, this show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Check out all the great tech shows at techpodcast.com. We're also syndicated across Stitcher. That's STITCHER.com. It's a place where you can pick up tech shows and all genres. So if you're looking for shows on books, shows on woodworking, shows on crafts, on motorcycles, on car repairs, house repairs, whatever the show is, you'll find it on Stitcher.com. You can download their app today on your favorite smartphone, either Android or iOS. If you have a minute, and you know, take a minute and do this. Check out the website at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Comment on these shows. Let me hear that you're out there, you're listening, you're enjoying the shows, and say, Jack, you know, this is how you can do it better, or whatever. I want to hear from you folks. If you have any great questions, or if you have any questions you're like, I don't know if this is great, that's all right. Call in at 724-701-0550. It's toll and airtime free from wherever you are. That's a lie. I don't know that to be true. Anyway, just call that number, 724-701-0550, and drop me a voicemail, and I'll play it on the air. If you have any questions or ideas for future shows, folks, I'd love to hear from you because, you know, that's what makes podcasting what it is getting the feedback from you, the listener. We know you're listening out there. We see, you know, the numbers where we're getting, you know, anywhere from 4,000 to 5,000 downloads per episode. So we know you're listening out there. Let's hear from you. Drop me an email at jackstechcorner@gmail.com. And you can also follow me on Twitter, and I hope you do that. Then you'll know when a new show is posted right away. And you can follow me at Technoman. That's T-E-C-H-N-O-M-A-N. T-E-C-H-N-O-M-A-N. Technoman. Let's first start out by telling you what happened last week. Because you're going, well, Jack, it's great that you're doing a show this week, but you didn't have a show last week. And you're exactly right. There was no show last week. You know, because sometimes life gets in the way of podcasting. You know, you never really want to let podcasting get in the way of life because then that kind of gets confusing. You know, most podcasters like myself, we do this because we enjoy doing it. We enjoy paying it forward to you. You know, this is not the full-time gig, and you know that. That's the way life goes. And that's probably 98% of the podcasters out there. This isn't their full-time gig of podcasting. Podcasting is something that we do to pay it forward and to bring some knowledge to you out there, the listener. So last week, we got tied up in some situations that I just couldn't get out of, you know, because, you know, even, you know, you have server issues that pop up and scripts that have to be written, and backups that have to be worried about. And, you know, some stuff just bit us in the backside there last Tuesday, so I didn't produce a show. But that's okay, because I think we got a pretty good one here for you tonight. This is something that you're either going to love or hate. I have a love-hate relationship with this topic, and I'll discuss that with you. I'm going to read you this email message I received from Dawn. And Dawn asks, Jack, first, thanks for the podcast. I've been learning something new each week. I've been asked to head up a project on web filtering. My company has been having some employees digging into the internet for things unrelated to work. What would you suggest for a web filter? Also, what are some of the costs that go along with filtering? All right, let me tell you first of all why I have a love and a hate relationship for web filtering. Web filtering is one of those things that, you know, it's almost like a necessary evil, I guess. If you're in business, Not so much anymore if you're in education. I mean, you have to filter if you're in education. Maybe on the college level, I don't know what you guys do on a college level, but I know in a K through 12 situation, it by law, you know, and this is government law. I don't know how it is in other countries, but by law here in the States, we must produce a web filter, and we must filter based on certain guidelines and certain rules. One big thing you must filter for naturally is pornography and nudity, violence, guns. You know, there's a bunch of different rules and keywords that we have to filter upon. You don't want to tighten the filter down so tight, especially in a school situation where the teacher or where the students can't do what they need to do. So you got to be very, very careful, because sometimes if you're searching a topic for like sex education, it'll see the word sex and it can block all those sites. So you really got to be careful. So what's my love-hate relationship with filters? It's just that they take a lot of work. They take a lot of your technology time out of your daily workload, you know, working on your servers, working on your switches, your networks, keeping everything's humming along, your backups moving. And then all of a sudden you're going to get an email from somebody that says, look, I need a website open. We're trying to teach a subject. Or if you're in a company, you may have a CEO say, look, I'm trying to research something, and every site I go to is just blocked, and I can't get anywhere, so I need this certain topic opened up. That's kind of where my love-hate relationship works. Filtering, I haven't found a filter yet, and I'm pretty. Let me back up. I could tell you why I'm educated enough to make this the statement about not liking any web filter. Since I've been in the education field, I've dealt with 6 different web filtering companies, and they all give you this great sales pitch. We don't have false negatives. Well, that's BS. They do have false negatives. Just like your antivirus software will tell you, we never have a false negative. How come when you go to open up a certain Word document, it says, ooh, caution, that could be a virus? No, I opened it yesterday. Same thing with web filtering. Everybody wants to give you this great sales pitch. Or they give you this great sales pitch. If you block by topics or by keywords, we still allow the important stuff to get through. Again, that's a ton of BS. That just doesn't happen. You have to be very meticulous when you're putting these things in. A web filter allows you to do 2 things. You could either block sites or you can exclusively open sites. We're going to talk a little bit about integrating these things with your Active Directory or your IP addressing scheme. So there's 2 ways really you can integrate this stuff that I found that works very well down to the desktop level or the user level. That's very important. Now, you can have a blanket web filter. Your blanket web filter will say, look, there's no pornography coming in. There's no nudity coming in. There's no guns or violence or whatever you may be dealing with. Some people even block all streaming media services. If you don't have a large internet pipe coming into your business, then you may want to block streaming sites. You don't want your workers watching YouTube during the day, Netflix. Maybe you don't even want them listening to Pandora or Spotify or any of those services. So you can block all streaming services. So these things actually have an application level. Now let's say, I'll get there. We're going to talk a little bit about you know, utilizing it for the application layer, and I'll tell you kind of how that works to give priority to certain applications. Now, the first step here is Dawn here and talk about with these couple employees is, the first step we do is go out and handle those few employees who are giving you the issues. I always hate any time, and I use hate, and hate's a big word. It's one of those words that I never like to use because I think it's so negative, and I don't believe you should hate anything or anybody. But I do hate, or I do dislike, anyway, the process that we have here, you know, in life. And this could be in any country you live in. I'm sure the process is the same. If you catch 2 people doing wrong, it can take down the whole entire company. The whole company has to change its direction, change the way it works because of 2 or 3 people doing something wrong. If you can identify these 2 or 3 people, I suggest that you go to these 2 or 3 people and you say, look, you know, Joe, Bob, and Cindy, quit doing this. This is wrong. You shouldn't be shopping on QVC during business hours. You shouldn't be shopping on Amazon during business hours, unless, of course, you're using my web link. Then I'm sorry. Anyway, you shouldn't be doing that. You shouldn't be, you know, sitting watching Netflix. Now, there could be time. Let's say if, you know, Cindy is having her lunch, she's having a sandwich at her desk, and she's catching up on a soap opera. That could be permissible in your company. I don't know. I don't know what your rules are. So, but the few people will bring down the whole company. So what Dawn is saying, well, we have a few people here, Jack, and now we have to spend thousands of dollars to block everything from everybody because these few people are giving us issues. If they don't want to conform to your company standards, your company, you know, write a policy and say, look, you can't do this. Everybody signs it. If they don't conform to that policy, then what you do is you go and you deactivate their internet service, or you fire the person, you put them out on the street and say, you're not going to work here anymore. It's very simplistic. We don't spend a lot of money to address two or three people. That's just not the way life is. Okay. Now we're talking about different kinds of web filters, and the two types that I know of that I've used, and I'll tell you, both of these types have some issues, is either a proxy filter or a sniffer. Now, a proxy filter I would never ever suggest, and the reason that is even though I know you're going to say, Jack, I put the proxy in my Active Directory, every time the computer comes on, that proxy number goes out. It's through a group policy, and we've done that. It works really well. But most users are pretty smart. Here's what most users will do. Most users will go to the proxy setting and just delete it. If they take it out, then that filter never really even goes, it doesn't go through that filter because they can remove the IP address. They could put in an outside proxy address and just go wherever they want to go. I don't really like proxy type of web filters for that reason. Plus, they become they're more prone to be very, very slow. So they're more prone to start losing, dropping web pages, dropping packets, because they can't handle that amount of traffic if you have a big network, because everything is going back and it's looking at every detail. What you want on your network, if you must have a web filter, is you want to have a web filter that's called a sniffer. What a sniffer does, instead of having two network cables, so we'll go back to the proxy. The way the proxy works is one cable comes out of the proxy to the WAN side, or to your internet firewall, or to your router. The other side gets plugged into your switch. Okay, so it's a pass-through system. Everybody goes through the proxy and goes out. The way a sniffer works is the sniffer will sit on your network. It has one network cable coming out of it. You plug it into a switch. The switch does have to have the port as mirrored. And if you want to know what a mirror port is, go back to some of my my old episodes and find the episode that I talk about mirroring a port to do packet capture. And you can actually set that up where every bit of traffic that goes into that switch gets picked up from that one port. Okay, this should be the last switch in your rack going to the internet. So in other words, your router, your firewall, or whatever will be plugged into there. And then this other cable from the sniffer web filter will be also plugged into that into your mirrored port. And you want to mirror the port that the data traffic is going out on. So I know that could sound like a lot, and I probably should even like have a video on this to show you how that would work. But all it is let's say I always use port number one for my main or my feeds. Port number one. So from port number one, I go out to a firewall. That firewall is my last device before I go to the internet. So the port under that, say if it's a 24-port switch, it would probably be port, 13. So port number 13, I would mirror to port number 1. That way port number 13 sees all the traffic that's going out over port number 1 on my switch. Hopefully that makes sense to you. What that allows the sniffer to do, or the web filter to do, is look at the traffic. And it will actually kill the traffic going out over port 1 before it goes, and it'll throw a web page up that says this site has been blocked due to whatever. That is how a sniffer works. Now, let's talk a little bit about approaching the web filter altogether. Okay, approaching it, what way should you approach this web filter? There's two ways you can buy filtering software. One is a company that I used some decades ago called WebSense, and I believe they're still in business today. WebSense sets it up where they sell you a software package. You can put that either on a virtual machine or on a standard just a standard box, you know, a standard server. And base that server, we'll talk a minute about requirements. So we'll talk about how to build that server. But you're paying then just for the software. So you're supplying the hardware, they supply the software. The other type of filtering device that's what we use is called a hardware device. So in other words, I buy a hardware appliance from the web filtering company. This can be whoever you might want to use out there. There's a ton of them, and it's just, you know, I just do a search for web filters on the internet, and you will find tons and tons of companies. I'm not going to recommend any one over the other because I've had issues with all of them. So I'm not going to tell you any one to go buy. They're all going to have some kind of a glitch or something that you don't like. So anyway, the hardware approach is I call the company and I say, look, I need a box to go on my network to do web filtering. So in other words, what they're going to sell you then is they're going to sell you a 1U rack-mountable server that they built to their specs, and the software will be already pre-installed on it. All you have to do when you get these boxes is you plug them in your network, you plug a monitor keyboard into it, you don't really need a mouse. You start the machine up, it will boot up. The first thing it's going to ask you, do you want to use DHCP or do you want to provide an IP address manually? Of course you want to provide an IP address manually because you want to always be able to log in this thing. You don't want its IP changing, especially if it's a proxy server type of a web filter, because that would really mess your network up and you would really, really have issues. So you set this thing up and basically that's all you do. At that point, you plug it into your switch and you're ready to rock and roll. It will start filtering out of the box. Every web filter company I've ever used or ever approached, web filter is set up automatically without any touching by you or any interaction by you to filter out pornography. So it's automatically set up to do that. Now, on top of that, they have what's called, what's actually called keywords and key phrases. And they have a whitelist and a blacklist. Those are pretty evident. Whitelist allows the websites through. A blacklist will block it. So if they're only filtering for porn, why do you need a whitelist? Well, it turns out that sometimes there could be something on a web page. There could be an advertisement. There could be a link to another web page that the web filter sees as, well, maybe this link could maybe go to pornography. It might be something like victoriassecrets.com, you know, the underwear company or something. They're like, oh, that could be nudity. So you may have to exclusively say this website's allowed, whatever that is. That's just an example. So you set that stuff up, and believe me, folks, this is an ongoing process. You're not going to know every website that's going to need open. You're not going to know websites that are open that really need blocked. That's what your blacklist will do. The blacklist is just the opposite of the whitelist. You have somebody call, your CEO calls, says, hey, I seen Jane downstairs, and she was on QVC.com again. She was buying all kind of crap. I want that blocked. Well, obviously, it must have been open, so you go to your blacklist. You say, I want to create another rule, and you put in QVC.com. Boom. No more Jane. No more shopping for Jane. So those are the two different types or approaches that you can go with. I recommend, if you want hands off, if you want the power of the law behind you and legal issues that may come up, buy the hardware type. So you want to buy the hardware version of a web filter. So I say buy the hardware type because then you can fall back on the company and use their attorneys and their people if anything gets through that you don't want to, especially if you are in the education realm. Don't ever go into the education realm by the software version, because then when you build your own server, something can go wrong. You can do something that somebody come back and sue you and say you didn't set the network card right or you didn't do something. Buy the hardware one and stay out of trouble. So is there any free solutions out there? Is there some way out there that we can create a web filter for our company, give us some basic stuff in there that we want to filter out, and not pay a nickel? Absolutely. There's probably a lot of them. The one that we used in the past that works extremely well, that's extremely unbreakable, is OpenDNS. So OpenDNS, you may use it now. If you use it as one of your DNS servers, then you're halfway set to go and use it as a full-time solution. Now, here's the problem with it, with the OpenDNS, is You have to register your outside IP addresses. So I hope, and I know you listen to this show, I know you're NATing your inside addresses, right? Everybody on your network should not have a routable IP address. I don't care if you have five computers. Don't ever, ever, never, ever do that. Don't ever give everybody a routable address. We walked into a business one time, did some consulting work. Somehow the owner bought a Class C bank of IP addresses, right? So they had 253 addresses for an office with 10 employees, 10 computers. They had 10 laser printers, IP printers, and they had their server. Every one of those computers and the IP printers all had a routable IP address. Now, why don't you want to do that? Well, the main topic and the main thing is security. People can hack in. They'll come right into that IP address and guess where they're at? They're in the particular computer. Would you rather have those people come into a firewall, that firewall get NATed with DHCP, stating that every computer may have a different internal address every day? It's harder, not impossible, but it's harder to track it down to the workstation if you have NAT, which is Network Address Translation, set up. Again, if you go back through some of the past shows, you will find where we did a whole topic on that and talked about setting it up and how to use that. So, but OpenDNS, you have to register your routable IP address. So when you do that, what happens is anytime any traffic comes out, goes to OpenDNS from your IP bank, your outside IP bank, it looks at it and there's a list on OpenDNS that you can go to their web filtering properties. And you can turn things on like pornography, gaming, gambling, weapons, you know, and you can key down to certain topics. What you can't do with OpenDNS, you're not going to exclusively open websites. There's no whitelist and there's no blacklist. At least at the time when I last used it, you can't do that. That's more of a paid application where you have to pay a company money because, you know, they're putting a lot of time and effort into writing the software to do this stuff. So again, OpenDNS is a great solution, especially if you're just doing with certain topics. Like streaming, it'll block. YouTube, it'll block. It'll block stuff like, any of the major streaming. Pornography, naturally, it'll block that. Just certain keywords like gambling, it'll block that. Online shopping. So there is some great stuff in there that will help you out with OpenDNS. With that said, I just said something about shopping, and I got to point out when you're looking for a web filter company, the first thing I ask is, does it filter malware and spyware? If the answer is we're working on that, hang up your telephone and don't call these people back. The answer should be at this point is, yes, we do filter for malware and spyware. What that's going to save you from doing is cleaning computers every day of the week, right, on your network, going out. Oh, I clicked on a link and I got all these pop-ups. I don't know what's going on. So you have to clean the computer with CCleaner and run all these tools on it, malware bytes and all this stuff. And the bottom line is, if you're filtering for that, it doesn't get through to the workstation. That's what you want. You don't want it to get through to the workstation. Now, I told you a little bit ago about app prioritizing. Most applications today, not all, most, I'm saying 60%, of applications today, I know we do probably 75% of our applications are done through a web browser. It's easier for software developers in these companies to have a server in their office and they update that software on that server and they serve it up to you over a web browser. It's so much easier, so much cleaner for companies to do that. We even have some in-house stuff that we serve up through web pages from our servers. Because applications, again, across the web are just so much easier for the developers to take care of. You don't have to worry about them calling you one day and saying, yo, Bob, so what version of software? And you go, well, I'm on version 4.22. And they go, well, that's nice. We're on version 7.39. You need to upgrade all your software. That doesn't happen when you have web-based applications because the web-based application is, you know, already updated by the developers on their own server. So when we talk about app prioritizing, to get a good web filter, tell them we want to be able to prioritize our applications. So the first thing we prioritize is our email because our email is hosted offsite and it's hosted through a website. And I told you many times we use Google Apps. So all of our Google apps have top priority, 100% of bandwidth all the time. All right. So in other words, if there's packets coming through and it sees all of a sudden the packets are getting crowded in the pipe and it sees you're getting your email, boom, you got your email because that application is number one on our application list. The next application should be like Netflix or no, I'm just kidding. It shouldn't be Netflix. Any applications you use online, you may use a an accounting program. You may use a contact manager that's online. All of those different items must be set in the priority list. Now, the next thing a web filter should have is bandwidth shaping. Bandwidth shaping allows you to go one step further than either saying this gets 100%, whatever. Bandwidth shaping allows you to say, I want certain websites or certain, sites at all in general or streaming sites whatever, to allow certain bandwidth. If you want people to quit watching YouTube in your facility, you don't want to block it. The best thing you can do is take YouTube, and this works, drop it down to 5 kilobytes a second. That way, all they do is watch a buffering screen. After about 1 day, nobody will be looking at YouTube no more because they know it's not blocked. You'll say, look, we don't block it, but they don't know why it's not really working because you limit the bandwidth to 5 kilobytes. Then it just doesn't work well. You can do the same thing with Pandora. Netflix, I would just block altogether. You don't even want that in your facility. You don't need Netflix on the job site. You just don't need to have that pressure on you. So, all right, we're going to back up once. Now, we talk about authenticating across the web filter. There's two different ways you can authenticate across the web filter. Ask the company if they do LDAP recognition. LDAP, we talked about that on a past show. LDAP recognition will allow you to, when your user logs in, the web filter goes, oh, this is the CEO of the company. They get block, 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 block of websites. Maybe they're not filtered at all. They get 100% of their bandwidth because they're the CEO, right? They're running your company. If you make the CEO happy, chances are you'll have a better life. Now, if you block everything the CEO goes to look at, chances are your life's going to suck pretty bad. It's just going to be pretty horrible, right? It's just going to be disgusting. Anyway, next thing you can do is you can say, look, we can have a group. Maybe we have a group of students. Maybe we have a group of staff workers. And you can start grouping these people down and you create different access lists in your web filter based on who you are and what group you're in. This works extremely well. What it also allows you to do is pull extremely detailed reports off of your web filter. If you're going to fire somebody in your company, some employee, or if you're in the education and you have a teacher who says, well, I think Johnny was looking or trying to look at this, because not only does that report give you all the sites that were accessed, it also gives you all the sites that were denied. So in our policy, it says you will not even attempt to look at this type of material. So if they do, then they could be suspended. Or if it's an employee, they could be fired. You know what I'm saying? So either way around that, very important ideas. The next way we can use a web filter is based on IP subnets. I like IP subnets. If you have your network, if you take your network and you VLAN it down and you know what IP subnets each group of users are on, you could build these same groups. That way you don't have to worry about the authentication server. You don't have to worry about attaching your LDAP to your Active Directory and all that. All the web filter does is when an IP address comes through, it says, oh, this is 192.168.100.4. We know that's the staff workers that are allowed this list. Or we have an IP 192.168.20.1. We know that that's a student IP. We can filter based on that student's computer because that's your plugged-in network. It does get a little hairy with wireless. Wireless, you kind of filter based on those IP addresses, and you just filter in a group filter. So there's a couple ways that you can authenticate users and get really, really good reports. Now, the last thing that Dawn asks about, and this is one that always kills me, and I just worked with the company to get pricing. I won't tell you who the company is, but even my work partner told me, he said, Jack, it's unbelievable the margins that these companies are making because they know that web filters are a necessity of life in business. And they know, you know, they have the best product in the world. Well, that's wonderful for them. I'm very happy and I'm glad they love their products. But the margin of cost is just realistic. Now, cost is based on two main factors. First, they're going to ask you the total number of users you have on the network. Never, ever, never, ever tell them the total number of users you have on your network. If you have 400 people working at your company, don't say 400. This is why I'm telling you this. If you have 400 people for your company, and let's say 200 of them people are in manufacturing of your product, they never touch a computer, they don't even get near a computer, don't include them in your count. Only include people that are using their computers that you want to filter. So that's something to think about, because it's going to run your cost up. If you say my company has 600 employees, they're not going to ask you what do they do. They're saying 600 employees or number of users. So that's the way you would look at that. Number of users that use or touch a computer or terminal. Now, the next thing they're going to ask you is how much bandwidth you have coming in and going out. How much download bandwidth and how much upload bandwidth. The reason they asked you that is not based on any type of, well, I guess it is kind of based on price, but the reason they asked you that is they want to know what size hardware to sell you. They want to make sure that you're going to buy the proper hardware, because each hardware can create a bottleneck. Now, obviously, I told you that the proxy servers are one of your worst bottlenecks out there. The proxy servers are not the fastest. So they have to have a big processor in there, you know, maybe a quad-core Xeon or maybe a triple-core, quad-core Xeon or six-core Xeon processor, or maybe even dual Xeons. It's going to have a ton of RAM. I'm talking maybe like 32 gigs of RAM to process all the crap that's going through there, because it's looking at all of your internet traffic. Very important, very critical, but it's got to do that in a timely fashion. Also, the network cards on this box will probably be 1 gig network cards. So plug them into your 1 gig switch. Don't ever plug a gig network card into a 100 meg switch. It just doesn't make sense. You're creating your own bottleneck, and it's your headache pile. And girls out there, guys and girls, it's just not worth the efforts. Put a 1 gig switch in and make sure this thing's plugged into a 1 gig switch. On the sniffer side, I found that sniffers don't take as much processing power because it's just sitting there sniffing. The only time it goes into action is if it sees something that has to block or something has to exclusively pass. Then it kind of goes into action and it does its job. But I would always recommend you buy a sniffer type. So ask them, say, is this a proxy type filter? And as soon as they say yes, hang the phone up and don't take any more calls from that company. That's not the web filter you want. So I'm just laying that out there for you. So overall, my take is on web filters, you know, if you don't have to filter, if you can handle your issues internally in-house with your employees, certain employees or whatever, create a nice internet policy and check on them every now and then, walk behind their computer, see what they're doing. Buy something that you can remote into their computers. I love the program called Governland. Check that out. And, you know, I've been trying to work up a deal with Governland to get them as a sponsor for these shows. But as to yet, they have not. So if you use Governland, make sure you say you heard it from Tips from the Server Room podcast from your pal Jack here in the studio. And hopefully maybe they'll contact me and maybe we'll work out something. But they are great because it allows you to pop in and out of computers all day. And you can see what people are doing kind of on their desktop. And they don't know you're there. So that's what's great about it. Somebody told me one time, they said, Jack, why do you guys spy on us? Don't you trust us? I said, I'm not spying on you at all. I mean, it's not mine. It's the company's network. It's the company's computer. It's not yours. Just because it's on your desk, it's not your computer. And we have the task of maintaining security on our system. And we have the task of maintaining these workstations. So I should be able to pop in there whenever I want. I don't have to be announced. And I'm just going to see if you're on the up and up. You will be surprised some days what you find, especially if you log on these computers during the lunch hour when people think it's my free time. I can do my QVC shopping. I can watch Netflix. I can watch some YouTube. But folks, they may be, in fact, taking down your bandwidth when maybe other people on the network or on your company maybe still actually working. Maybe you have staggered lunches, so everybody's working with clients all the time. That's key stuff to think about. So yeah, check that program out. It's pretty cool in its own sense. So folks, I hope you learned something tonight. Dawn, I hope you picked up enough to jump on your project. get going with your project. I hope you do a really, really good job with it. If you have any questions about anything, you know, just shoot me an email, jackstechcorner@gmail.com. And you know, if you find certain companies that you like, email me and maybe ask me what I think, because like I said, I've dealt with at least six, maybe seven web filter companies since I've been in education alone. So they're all not created equal, and some of them don't work at all. So that might be something you want to think about before you lay out, you know, you're talking about the cost that goes along with web filtering. It could be anywhere from $6,000 to $50,000 to web filter. And do they have a lot of leeway? Yes. Keep pressuring the salespeople. Keep pressuring. If your first quote comes back and says, look, it's going to be, we figured out it's $16,000. Tell them you can't afford it. Tell them, you know, you're looking at another device that you can buy that does the same thing as theirs, and it's going to be about $8,000, about half that. You'll be surprised. They'll come back and say, well, what about $8,500? Because our product is maybe better than everybody else's. Work with these vendors. They have a big leeway with their sales team. Folks, I want to thank everybody for joining me tonight. I really appreciate you being here. There would be no sense of podcasting if everybody out there wasn't downloading and listening to the shows. It would be just me talking to myself and then listening back at it, you know, and picking up new pointers for myself. So something to think about. Please remember, anytime you use Amazon, anytime you buy anything from Amazon, use my web link. It can be found at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Make sure you deactivate your ad blocker first. Shut that ad blocker off so you can see the link. And if you buy anything, if you buy car wax, if you buy floor wax for your house, dusting stuff for your house, whatever, or if you buy that brand new computer, that brand new, you know, the brand new Surface Pro 3 that's out, use my Amazon link and then go buy it. It's not going to cost you anything more. It's just going to take you one extra step to go to Amazon and then make your purchase. I've even had people save stuff in their shopping cart and then use my or their wish list. Use my link and go and just start buying your stuff out of your wish list. So that will work also. Once again, it's tipsfromtheserverroom.com and use the Amazon link. Folks, if you want to learn, you're like, man, Jack, we're getting ready to upgrade. We're getting ready to migrate from 2003 finally. We're going to migrate to 2012. We've never seen it. We don't know what it looks like. We don't even know how it acts. Then you want to take one of my courses. I teach Windows Server 2008 R2 or Windows Server 2012 R2 or VMware ESXi 5.5 server from install to administration. Yep, installing it to administration and everything in between, DHCP, DNS, group policies, Active Directory, all that stuff is in there. And it's such a low, low price that people email me all the time, say, Jack, you're crazy. You should be doing this for $2,000 a student. And I said, look, this is my little way of paying it forward, making sure you understand how to run your servers and get everything up to snuff and make everything work. So that's why these are so low priced. It's only $250 per course. You can find these courses at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Once again, it's tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Look at the online link at the top of the webpage. Now, when you find that online link, click on that and look at the courses, and you can sign up for one of those today. People often ask, Jack, when I sign up for that course, when are you going to start it? You're going to start it in May? You're going to start it in June? When's your next class? My next class is 2 in the morning, 1 in the morning, midnight, middle of the afternoon, 10 o'clock in the morning. Whenever you sign up, as soon as you go through that PayPal wall, you know, the PayPal where you pay for the course, boom, you're on the course and you're on your way. Once you finish the course, you will receive a certificate from me in the mail, and these certificates are great for framing. I've had a lot of people email me after taking the course and say, Jack, I believe the course got me my job now as network administrator. And, you know, it just was a nice certificate to show the prospective employer, and they got hired. So these are great learning abilities for you. And it's also for people out there that's been doing this for decades that just want to bone up a little bit. And once you sign for the course, you're never, ever deleted from the course. So it's not one of those, you got to be done in 6 weeks. These courses are, take the rest of your life and do it. That's fine. You do it on your time. That's why I set them up. So they are set up online and they're always there. Once again, go to tipsfromtheserverroom.com and sign up today. You'll be happier tomorrow that you did. Folks, I want to thank everybody once again for joining and listening into the podcast here. I truly do enjoy everybody being here, and I enjoy seeing those numbers. Like I said, you know, like 5,000 downloads per episode is pretty good. That's great, actually. And I'm always proud to see those numbers. Folks, I want you to take care. Keep your networks humming along. And if you have any future ideas, again, email me at jackstechcorner@gmail.com. Take care. I'll talk to you next week on Tips from the Server Room.
You just listened to Tips from the Server Room with your host, Jack. If you have any questions, please drop me a comment at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Thanks again for tuning in and downloading the shows. Now sit back, relax, and listen to the remainder of the music. We'll see you next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long.